yes, there is societal madness all around, but we're going to bring moral and spiritual clarity here.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to The Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, and I am delighted to be with you today. Boy, a bunch of issues to talk with you about, especially during this first hour. Second hour, I want to open up the phones, as we do on Fridays. You've got questions, we've got answers. Give opportunity to folks to call in that normally don't get to answer some of your email questions. But as always, so much going on in the world that is around us. And I want to start with our president today and his ongoing tweet criticisms, his Twitter criticisms against Attorney General Jeff Sessions. This is one of the areas where I wish that the president would do things differently. I think it's wrong in many ways for him to be attacking his own administration, his own cabinet, his own co-workers. You don't do that publicly. And if it's to try to put pressure on Attorney General Sessions to resign, I see that as a wrong thing to do. I believe that many of us who've voted for President Trump, some enthusiastically, some like me with concern, one of the things that he did that we were very pleased with was appointing Jeff Sessions as Attorney General. There has been a lot of outcry against him, especially in LGBT circles, as if he's this hate monger and destructive. But I believe he's making good choices, moral choices, and many things he's done have helped push us in the right direction, not in the direction of hate, but in the direction of fairness, equality, truth, and what's best for everyone in society. So I don't find it necessary to defend everything President Trump does because I voted for him. When President Obama did something that I thought was good, I was happy to talk about it, even though I did not vote for him and so strongly opposed him in other ways. Conversely, even though I did vote for President Trump and I'm glad for some of the decisions he's made and some of the people he's appointed, obviously most clearly on the Supreme Court, in point of fact, I don't find it necessary to defend everything he does or support everything he does or agree with everything he does. And this is one of those things I wish he wouldn't do. And I do hope that whatever differences he has with Attorney General Sessions can be resolved. And the fact that there's this ongoing Russia investigation and President Trump believes would not have happened if Attorney General Sessions had not recused himself, he did what he felt was ethically right. And again, to do this in this way, I find disconcerting, I find wrong, and I'm not going to champion it or support it. You know, my strongest critic, far and away, 100-1, is my wife Nancy. I mean, on a daily basis, she could tell me there's a better way of doing something, or I could change a sentence here in something that I wrote, or I should consider this approach when I'm doing something on social media. I mean, we've been married over 40 years, and we're together on all these things that we do, and she's always finding fault with something I'm doing to help improve who I am and what I do and how I communicate for the glory of God and for the good of others. So friends, husbands, wives, family, you can say you differ, say that you think something's wrong when we come in with a blind loyalty to a president, whoever we were and are, be it with Barack Obama or Donald Trump or anyone else, or even a religious leader, a spiritual leader, with blind loyalty where we can't see faults. It doesn't speak well of our integrity, in my view. All right, we'll be right back.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
By feeding children and families these lies, children are having their normal psychological development interrupted. They're being put on the puberty blockers, which essentially castrates them chemically, followed by surgical mutilation later on. This is child abuse.
That was the voice of Dr. Michelle Critella from the American College of Pediatricians, herself a pediatrician. She was on Tucker Carlson last night. And Tucker Carlson on Fox has had a number of guests in recent weeks discussing transgender issues, including those that would be trans activists. And he's asked them forthright questions like, well, is there any science behind what you're saying? Is there any objective way that we can determine gender? Is it all what someone perceives? Is sex hardwired? What are the differences? So he had on Dr. Critella, and the American College of Pediatricians is a smaller group that broke away from the large National Association of Pediatricians because of differences on some of these critically important issues that affect our children. We talk about these things because they affect our children. It's not the only reason. It's a big reason. All right? So she has an article in the Daily Signal, July 3rd of this year. I'm a pediatrician. How transgender ideology has infiltrated my field and produced large-scale child abuse. Yes, large-scale child abuse. And she answers some pointed questions that Tucker Carlson asked, very sympathetic questions he asked. He was not being hostile in any way. He was asking good questions, the right questions. And what's the issue? What's the problem with, say, a child that's 4 or 5? The boy believes he's really a girl. What's the problem with putting the boy in a girl's dress? What's the problem with changing the boy's name? What's the problem maybe when the kid gets to 11, 12 years old or 10, 11 years old, putting the kid on hormone blockers to stop the onset of puberty? What's the problem then with sex change surgery, say, after puberty? I mean, people are happier with this, and this is who they really are, and a child really knows. And this is some of what Dr. Critella is responding to. So, Johnny, let's grab the next few clips. We'll start with clip number 2. And she is just speaking some reality here, which almost every parent can readily relate to. Listen to what she says.
Children who are ages 3 to 10, they engage in magical thinking. They don't know the difference so easily between fantasy and reality. We need to nurture them through adolescence, through natural puberty. Our job as parents and physicians is to help children embrace their healthy bodies. And when this is done, once they get past puberty into late adolescence, as many as 95% will come to embrace their bodies and identify with their biological sex.
Ah, fascinating. As many as 95%. I've read consistently 80% or more. She says as many as 95%. In other words, if you don't tamper with things, if you don't play with the kids' hormones, if you don't intervene, if you don't let the boy wear a dress and call Johnny Jane, if you don't do these things and lovingly work with your child, yes, some say they're tormented, they're upset, but there are ways to work with the children. Again, say, where are the voices? There are voices advocating these things, but they get suffocated. The moment you speak up about these things, you're transphobic, you're a bigot, the kids are going to kill themselves, you're a monster. All you're saying is, no, there's actually a better way. When I was on Tyra Banks about these issues years ago, when they called me to come on at the recommendation of Focus on the Family, I said to the advanced interviewer, I said, I'm not a medical doctor. I want you to understand that. I'm not a professional psychologist or therapist or counselor. And I gave them the background. They said, no, you're just right for this. I said, fine. So I was going to address things as best as I understood and having spoken with medical professionals about these issues as well. And my whole contention was the best solution is to help a child find wholeness from the inside out. Is not that the best solution? Isn't that better? than having a boy, a biological male, wear a dress and use the girls' room at school? And what about changing for gym class and the embarrassment questions about things like that? Okay, isn't it better to not put a child on hormone blockers to stop the onset of puberty, which is the way God designed our bodies to grow and mature and change? Isn't it better to not have to go through sex change surgery and then never be fully male or fully female? No matter what you've gone through in the change, you will never be a fully biological male or female if you switch from one to the other, nor will you be able to reproduce as a biological male or female if you make that switch, okay? You make the complete switch. And on top of that, you have to be on hormones for the rest of your life. Isn't it far better to help the child from the inside out? And yet, Johnny, you make a great point. When I went to college, I switched my major three times. I started as a music major, then switched to liberal arts, then became a Hebrew major. Many people are trying to find their identity in many other ways. Plenty of ladies were tomboys and wanted to be boys when they were little, and they outgrew it. There are all kinds of different things. Look, I talked to a woman on a plane one time, and she was all out transgender advocate. I don't know what her background was, why that was her position, but when we got chatting, and I said, look, you have little kids, they believe they're dogs, like a three-year-old child. Should they, you know, be able to eat out of a, you know, dog food bowl on the floor? Yeah, sure. You gotta be kidding me. That's the way you've raised your kids? You walk them on a leash on all fours down the street if your boy believes he's a dog when he's 4 years old? You say, Mike Brown, how cruel can you be? You don't understand. It's different. I do understand that some kids very, very deeply to the core of their being believe they're trapped in the wrong body. Some of it is the messaging of our society. Some of it is the confusion coming to little children who don't understand a lot. And some of it may be some type of imbalance in their system. Some of it may have to do with the way they were raised or nurtured. Walt Heyer, for example, you go to his website, sexchangeregret.com, but Walt Heyer talks about how his grandmother used to put a dress on him, and he got the most praise when his grandmother put a dress on him, and oh, look at how cute, and he liked that. Then he was sexually abused by a family member, all right? And then as he grew up, he had these issues and was really convinced he was a woman and had sex change surgery, only to realize that that did not solve his problems, and that there were other issues to deal with. So how could you argue with the contention that the best case scenario is to help people from the inside out? 866-348-7884. Here, we keep looking for cures for cancer, do we not? You say, well, we have chemotherapy and surgery. Yeah, but certainly not ideal. Absolutely not ideal, and people still dying from cancer after chemotherapy, after surgery. So the doctor is doing their very best to save lives. But the best case solution is to find something from the inside out that would help someone. Let's say you have a person that's, you know, diagnosed with schizophrenia or something, and say, look, if we medicate you, it's not going to be that severe. Okay, it helps. It helps the problem. It helps maybe some of the torment, but it's not ideal to be medicated, right? So I'm praising the medical profession for doing the best it knows how to do in many cases. But when this is the best case scenario, when this is the thing to be applauded, and if you don't agree with this, you're a bigot, that is absolutely ridiculous. The best case scenario is to help a child from the inside out. And here's Dr. Michelle Cretella, a respected pediatrician. She and her colleagues deal with kids day and night also. And they say that when you start intervening and put the kid on hormone blockers and dressing them opposite to the biological sex, it's actually abusive and not helpful. Let's go on. Very, very important point, clip number three, an important point that she makes.
If you have a young child on puberty blockers who goes directly to cross-sex or sex change hormones, they become sterile. You're sterilizing children.
So that's another issue. And what long-term studies do we have that tell us the results of putting kids on hormone blockers? And now 10, 20, 30, 40 years later, what are the effects of those hormone blockers? They stop the onset of puberty. But then what? Michelle Critell is telling us, look, the vast, vast majority, as high as 95%. If you can just nurture them and work with them until they go through puberty, as many as 95% will be happy in their bodies. They will not want sex change. It tells us we're tampering with something very dangerous. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the Line of Fire. Again, I want you to know that I am sensitive to people's struggles who identify as transgender. No, I can't relate personally. I've tried to think about how you feel, but I can't know. I've never struggled with this in my life, so I don't pretend to be able to understand, but I am able to listen to others and hear what they share with me. A gentleman wrote us, got this email today that was sent to me. Hello, I'm a Christian who became divorced due to a genetic discovery after undergoing infertility treatments. I found out I was XXY with a GRGR deletion of my Y chromosome. I have low testosterone, developed breasts, lack body hair, lack muscles, feel inferior to other men. I believe this led me to experience gender dysphoria, of which I still struggle. I currently attend sexual therapy and men's support group, of which it helps a little, but I do feel like I'm lying to myself. I have fear of society, the church, family. It's not something I made up. So the struggle is real. Hoping I can change my view and assimilate into my born physical identity as man. What a terrible struggle. Sir, I can't relate. Whatever degree I try to picture this again, I can't relate to what you've lived through. And I share it on the air so others know this is real. There are, in some cases, biological or chromosomal abnormalities. And there are those that would be in the category of intersex because of either biological or chromosomal genetic abnormalities. And we have to treat those who struggle in these ways with great compassion, with great understanding, saying, okay, this struggle is unique. It's not a sin issue. In other words, for Brian to be questioning, is he really a man? It's not a sin issue. He's not a wicked person and trying to... No, he's a human being trying to follow the Lord as he describes it, and struggling because of some abnormalities, all right? So that's where the church needs to love on someone like this. That's where the men need to help him feel as at home with them and as part of them as everyone else. That's where some work of the Holy Spirit in his heart and mind can help heal wounds or reaffirm truths about his malehood. And then above and beyond that, he has to try to find his greatest identity being in Jesus, even say, okay, I'm not your typical man. I'm not your typical man, but that doesn't mean I'm not whole in God's sight, that I'm not important in God's sight, that I'm not loved in God's sight. All right? So I say that just to say we are sensitive to these issues, and we recognize that in a very small percentage of cases, we're dealing with people with biological chromosomal abnormalities. But that, of course, does not mean God did not make us male and female. That does not turn gender upside down. That does not mean you are whatever you perceive yourself to be. A few minutes, I want to play an interesting interaction that Piers Morgan had with a parent. You'll find this very instructive as well. But one more clip from Dr. Critella on Tucker Carlson last night, clip number 4.
Guidelines suggest that puberty blockers be given at ages 11 to 12, but I've had reports from colleagues across the country and UK, and also find them in various news reports, that children as young as nine have been put on these puberty blockers. And what it does, it arrests normal development. Puberty is not a disease.
All right, so puberty is not a disease. You are arresting normal development. Now, why do they do that? Well, allegedly, it gives the child more time to decide their real identity. But since puberty is a normal part of life, that helps reaffirm their identity. Boys become more boys and girls become more girls through puberty and after puberty. You're actually stopping them from fully understanding who they are. That's number one. Number two is you are saying, well, listen, if they're going to have sex change surgery and we can stop them from developing to look more male or look more female, then when they have sex change surgery, it's going to be a better outcome, as opposed to Bruce Jenner having sex change surgery as an adult male, obviously still an adult male, although he perceives himself and seeks to present himself as a female. So that's the other reason for it, but you are stopping what God intended for that human being. You're stopping it from happening, and that is part of their development. It's interesting that Michelle Critella, in her article in the Daily Signal, says that in addition to the American College of Pediatricians and the Alliance for Therapeutic Choice, there are organizations like the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, the Catholic Medical Association, and the LGBT-affirming youth gender professionals that differ with some of this transgender strategy. As for the science, as for the facts, Dr. Critella points out that, one, twin studies prove no one is born trapped in the body of the wrong sex. She says some brain studies have suggested that some are born with a transgendered brain, but these studies are seriously flawed and prove no such thing. And she goes on with further examples, again, to say that the identical twins, all right, the largest study of twin transgender adults published by Dr. Milton Diamond in 2013, only 28% of the identical twins both identified as transgender. 72% of the time, they differed. Fascinating. So if it was brain and you have identical twins, you would have identical results. So that's not it. It's also important. Gender identity is malleable, especially in young children. So that she points out that 75 to 95% of pre-pubertal children who are distressed by their biological sex eventually outgrew that distress. Again, kids can be confused about these things. Give it time. Nancy and I were talking to a parent the other day about a child, 13-year-old child, and certain challenges the child was going through. And we said, you know, a lot of things, they grow out of it. They grow out. It had nothing to do with these issues, just other things. They grow out of it. Number three, she says puberty blockers for gender dysphoria have not been proven safe. You can experiment on your kid. Number four, there are no cases in the scientific literature of gender dysphoric children discontinuing blockers. Five, cross-sex hormones are associated with dangerous health risks. Six, neuroscience shows that adolescents lack the adult capacity needed for risk assessment. Seven, there's no proof that affirmation prevents suicide in children. Eight, transition-affirming protocol has not solved the problem of transgender suicide. She says, bottom line, transition-affirming protocol is child abuse. It is because we love children that we address these things. And this is some of the ongoing madness in our society. We love the kids. We pray for the kids. We care about the kids. But this is cultural and societal madness. That's why we speak the truth. And to all of you listening, you're welcome. You're welcome. Why did I say that? Because everywhere we go, we have lines of people who say, thank you for speaking on these issues. By God's grace, I'll continue to be your voice. We'll be right back. Change the world.
Change the world. It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Change the nation. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, in a moment, I want to talk to you about Charlie Gard and how he speaks to us right now, even though he can't utter a word. A very, very sad situation from the UK. And do my best to clarify some of the laws there and how the healthcare system works. So I want to get into that with you in a moment and some really interesting interaction that Piers Morgan had with one of his guests. 866-348-7884. But if you are listening to me right now in the greater Charlotte, North Carolina area, if you're listening to me in greater Charlotte, North Carolina, let's say this. You're within a few hours of Charlotte, North Carolina. May I give you a personal invitation to join me on August 5th, Saturday, August 5th. Put it on your calendar. It's a day you do not want to miss. This will be from noon until, something like 6:30 or so in the evening, Southern Evangelical Seminary, an all-day event on God, sex, and gender. Different ones will be speaking, including Dr. Frank Turek, including myself. We'll be addressing these issues from a biblical point of view, from a sociological point of view. And then, at the end of the day, this God, Sex, and Gender conference, there will be a debate, Dr. Frank Turek and myself debating two local ministers. And the question we'll be asking is, can you be loving and tolerant without always affirming? That's going to be the debate. So pleased that these ministers have agreed to step forward and do this. The first time Frank Turek and I will get to team up together on a debate panel. So check this out, God, Sex, and Gender. And I'm just looking at things online. It's all on my itinerary on my website, askdrbrown, askdrbrown.org. You can find it there. Okay, something funny that happened, and I'll mention it to you, and then we'll get back to Piers Morgan, and then we'll talk about Charlie Gard. I got on our Ask Dr. Brown YouTube channel. I just saw before when I was looking for something else that we have posted or have ready to post something like 930 videos. Some of them are debates I've had. Some of them are excerpts from our radio show. Some of them are special videos where I answer your questions. There's a whole teaching series I have on answering Jewish objections to Jesus. There's some of my sermons and messages. We also have their little talks I'll give. We call them rants on different things happening in the society around us. So I put up one. This was designed for believers. I put this up for believers asking the question, is the Bible the infallible word of God? Is the Bible infallible? And this was, what does the Bible say about itself? You follow? The question was, does the Bible describe itself as infallible? Or does the Bible describe itself as of inerrant or what? How do we understand that? So it's for believers asking what the Bible says about itself. It was not an apology or a defense or an explanation, apologia, I should say. It was not addressing non-believers or atheists or skeptics or God mockers or anything like that. It was addressing, what does the Bible say about itself for believers? Well, somehow it started circulating among atheists and mockers and non-believers. I don't know how they got to it, but all these comments pouring in, the Bible's infallible because it says it is. It's like, oh, you're reading this as if this was some kind of defense of the faith. So normally my videos, they can be like, 150 likes to 2 dislikes or 400 likes to 20 dislikes. This is 176 likes to 55 dislikes. I guess all these folks came pouring in. So I welcomed them to the video and to the YouTube channel and said, hey, check out this video by Ravi Zacharias that answers why we believe the Bible is God's word. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to the broadcast. Okay, I wrote an article a few weeks back about a mother who does not identify as male or female. She is a female. She gave birth to her child. And she is obviously on hormones because she has a mustache and kind of a scruffy beard, the one picture that I saw holding the baby. And she fought so that she would not have to identify her child as male or female, birth certificate or whatever official documentation the government would require. Was she in Canada, I think? This woman said that she will raise her child as outside of the gender binary until the child decides what it is. So I guess over a period of time, the child will identify in a certain way. Now, I wonder if she has a boy and the boy likes boy toys and the boy likes boy things, does that make the boy a boy? Or is that just societal? Is that just gender stereotyping of the society? That boys like roughhousing and like to play with guns and girls like pretty things and like to play with dolls. Is that just gender stereotyping? I mean, how do you actually know? What is a boy and what is a girl and what does it even mean? That's part of the madness into which some of our society is descending. But Piers Morgan is asking some very logical, rational questions about this. So I want you to hear some of this interaction with the mother. Now, by the way, an article by Curtis Wong on the Huffington Post today says Piers Morgan is having a meltdown about his hate for absurd gender fluid movement. referring to it as a meltdown. And I mean, on and on. It's just they're blasting him. For what he's saying. He tweeted, I fully support transgender rights. I don't support gender fluid BS. He said, I don't hate the people. I hate the movement. Human beings are male or female, not whatever they fancy being. Piers Morgan, you're right, sir. You know, I've differed with you on other things and differed with you when I was on your show, but you're absolutely right about this. So let's listen to some of this interaction. What they call a meltdown, I call sanity. Start with clip number 12, Piers Morgan speaking to this parent who identifies as outside of the gender binary.
When I was born, I was assigned female, but that doesn't mean I was born a girl.
Okay, and then you had a transgender, you had an operation to become male or not?
So I'll remind you, because I know this is not the first time you've heard this, the genital configuration and surgical history of trans people is not actually the issue on the table. It's not the conversation that needs to be had.
But that wasn't my question. My question was simply, did you have the operation to change sex?
Ah. This individual, this woman, this mother, was, quote, assigned female at birth. You know what that means? You know what that means, right? The doctors look, and here is a biological girl, and let's say you could do a test right then, chromosomal test. 99%+ of the case, you'll find out that this child that looks like a girl biologically is a girl chromosomally. So genetically, she is a girl. Was not assigned female. She was not assigned female. It would be like when I was born and someone assigned me Chinese. No, I'm not Chinese. Or they assigned me female. No, I'm a male. They assign me whatever, you know. They assign me, come up with whatever you want, you know, an African-American from Norway. that's not who I was. That's not who I am. She was not assigned female at birth. She is female. She is a girl. Then Piers Morgan wants to know, well, did you have sex change surgery? Well, it's not relevant. So hang on. Biology doesn't make you male or female. Got it. chromosomes, DNA, genetics don't make you male and female. Your plumbing does not make you male or female. What makes you male or female is what you think. Yeah, you can see where the madness leads. So the interaction continues. Number 13.
What I'm more concerned about is your baby having absolutely zero identity until it decides what it wants to be. Can I call it it? What do I call your baby? Is it an it? What is it?
I use the pronouns they and their, and the same pronouns I use for myself, I use for my kid.
They or there is a plural.
Yeah, correct. Now, look, when you are writing something, okay, sometimes you have to use they generically because you don't know if you're speaking about he or she. You might say, if someone goes to the doctor, they want to be able to decide for themselves. When you said someone, that's singular. Now they, that's plural. And that's what these transgender activists are saying. Not necessarily saying they because they is more than one and they have multiple identities. No, but they because that's generic. When you don't know if it's a he or a she, you say they. Well, when you know it's a he or a she, you don't say they. When you say they about an individual, you're making a big mistake. You are speaking incorrectly, factually and grammatically. Piers Morgan, when he says, do I call the baby an it? Well, if it's not male or female, what is it? And again, what if the child switches? What if the child feels one day, you're growing up with a mother with a full mustache and beard. I'm not talking about someone with a little, you know, a woman who deals with a little facial hair. I'm talking about someone who by choice is, and it's got to be hormones. Tell me I'm wrong, okay? But it's got to be hormones involved. And if I'm wrong, fine, I'll stand corrected. But I don't think that's going to happen. So what if the child, I want to be like you. I want to be gender binary outside of the gender binary also. Well, what's wrong with that? So the discussion continues, and Piers Morgan is asking something totally valid. Number 14.
Taking your logic, why would it be inappropriate for your child when they reach four or five to identify as a monkey? I mean, you
because
believe in the right...
Because they're a human being. They're a human being. And we're talking about gender. We're not talking about species.
Okay. So your baby can be a human being.
They are a human being. Yeah. I'm raising them as a human being.
Didn't answer the question. What if the child identifies as another species? What about the people who do identify as other species? I documented in my book, Outlasting the Gay Revolution. I've documented it in many articles. What about them? What about that? People who call themselves Therian or other kin. This includes some other things at times, but there are people who identify as part animal or entirely animal. You know, you might have heard like some Native American and, you know, this person they call wolf because they have the wolf spirit, you know, or the spirit of this animal or that animal. And you know, maybe we've heard of that kind of thing. But, well, there are people who go further with that. And there are people who they have parties and gatherings. I've watched videos about it. In fact, it was a gay network that aired a series that I watched some of the excerpts where a guy's talking about, yeah, never felt at home at school and struggled with depression and suicide because he knew he was really part wolf or part dog or part lion and others didn't understand it. Then he found out there were others like him out there and they've had these gatherings. And they'll wear tails or put on outfits and they'll howl and they'll make animal noises. And you say, well, they sound like they need help. Yes, they do. They do need help. There's obviously something wrong there because they are not really animals. Well, this woman is not a man, is not outside of the gender binary. And these people are not wolves or cats or bumblebees or fish. Or sharks or whatever, they're not those things any more than Bruce Jenner is a woman. This is reality. And look, if you don't believe me, go to AskDrBrown.org and just type in the word dragon, okay? If you think I'm making this stuff up, go to AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org, and type in the word dragon. And you'll see a video about the man who became a female dragon. And you'll see the parrot man and the woman who believes she's a cat and the man who believes he's a 6 or 7 year old boy and the man who believes he's a dog. It's all there. These people need our help. Let us not change reality based on their struggles.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, as we've been talking about children, let's talk now about an infant, maybe the most famous infant in the whole world right now, Charlie Gard. If you follow the story in the UK, he had very serious disease, condition, because of which doctors, from what I understand, is a fine hospital in the UK, saw no possible treatment for him, believed he was just going to degenerate. And when his parents said, look, they found out about potential alternative treatment, they can fly him to the States. The cost of the transport treatment, $1.7 million, got raised privately. And the doctors were against it. It ultimately went to the courts, and the courts said no. In one of the most horrifying parts of the decision, a doctor for the hospital argued that the child's condition of existence would not be right. It would be inhuman to allow the child to continue in this existence. In other words, some are worthy of living and some are not. Obviously, very scary words there. I've been in dialogue back and forth with an old friend who was raised in Scotland and has lived in the States for many years, but is in Scotland with some friends now, and said, Mike, it's not the healthcare system in the UK. The issue is not the healthcare system. This is the courts. And I said, well, how is it that the courts have the power to say no to the parents taking the child for treatment? So one way or another, the UK system has told the parents, you cannot, we will not allow you to take your own child for alternative treatment. We will not allow it. And President Trump got involved, said, hey, what can we do to help? And the U.S. said, hey, we're going to give him a temporary residence so that he can come over and so on. And yet, they said no. And finally, Charlie's parents, his mom and dad, said, too late now. All these many weeks waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And it's too late. Can you imagine the pain? Can you imagine thinking, who knows, he could have been cured, or he could have maybe made it for a few years and had some quality of life, or we could have been able to interact, or maybe he could have been normal. We don't know, because they wouldn't let us try. It's outrageous. But in the midst of the pain, I wanted to share some things that I feel are redemptive about how a tiny little baby who can't utter a word has spoken to the world. You can read my article at AskDrBrown.org, AskDrBrown.org. So first, Charlie reminds us that all human life is valuable, whether strong or weak, young or old, healthy or sick. Remember the Horton Hears a Who story? A person's a person no matter how small. So Charlie, his value comes by being a person. His value doesn't come because he's smart, or he's tall, or he's fast, or he's a good musician, or he's made a lot of money, or he's funny. No, his value comes because he's a human being created in the image of God. By the way, from what I read last night, Dr. Seuss was not happy when pro-lifers used his Horton Hears a Who story to support their argument that Every life is important, beginning in the womb. A person is a person, no matter how small. From what I read, he was not a pro-life advocate. Obviously, he didn't carry through his own illustration there. Second thing we see is that there's nothing like a parent's love. There is an extraordinary tenacity. I mean, some of us prayed for the situation. Some signed petitions. Some gave financially. Others cried for them. But we didn't feel what the mom and dad felt. We didn't feel what the mom and dad felt. No one can hold that hope like a mom and dad. No one can nurture like a mom and dad. No one can persevere like a mom and dad. There's no higher calling than being a mom and dad. God has placed a human life into our care. And then third, Charlie reminds us that the state cannot be the ultimate caregiver and the ultimate arbiter of life and death. Again, I'm not talking about the court sentencing a criminal to a right prison sentence or something like that. I'm talking about health care. I'm talking about caring for needs, making medical decisions. Ultimately, this cannot be what the state does. Look, I have heard from friends living in the UK over the years and in European nations like Norway or others that there are many positive benefits to the socialized healthcare they have there. I'm not saying it's all monstrous and evil. And I do not have the solution for Obamacare versus Trump care. It's not my area of expertise. And if I was ever going to have a real serious discussion about it, I'd either have experts on with me or I'd focus on it for many weeks and start to really dig down deeper into the issues. So I am not the one to be making all types of announcements and proclamations about Obamacare, Trump care. No. What I am saying is this. The courts and government cannot stand in the way of parents urgently seeking to provide treatment for their child or individuals seeking to get treatment for themselves. That's what we cannot allow to happen here in the States. All right, friends, let me remind you that on my website, we also have my final response to counter-missionary Rabbi Yisroel Blumenthal. We've posted three videos each, 20-minute presentations on the real Jewish Messiah, then rebuttals to one another's presentations, then final responses to one another's presentations. I think you'll find them enlightening, eye-opening. I feel very good about the exchange now that it's been done, and I'm hoping that it will open Jewish hearts and minds to Jesus being the Messiah, will strengthen believers, will even bring in those who are not Jewish to recognize Jesus, Yeshua, as our Messiah and the Savior of the world. That's there. If you missed any of the other links, then just go right through the description on the video there on YouTube or on our Ask Dr. Brown page, and it'll give you all the details that you need so you can watch all of the presentation, watch Rabbi Blumenthal's responses as well. That's there on the website. Latest articles are there. Other videos getting some interest and attention. Who is the real Muhammad? It's a short video, but you'll find that one helpful as well. Okay, one other thing. Have you downloaded the opening chapter for Saving a Sick America yet? Still haven't? Have you watched the trailer at least? No? Okay, go to savingasickamerica.com, and you'll see right there where you can download for free opening chapter and introduction and where you can watch the trailer as well. If you want to order, there's still time to pre-order. It's kind of a collector's edition, a signed and numbered copy of the book. You can do that at askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. It comes out September 26th, but we'll do our best to get books to you earlier than that. And on our website, askdrbrown.org, that's the place to stand with us with your help and support. We do this together. Jesus is Lord. The phone lines are open. You've got questions. We've got answers.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of